Welcome to Scary Storytime by Spooky Boo. www.scarystorytime.com. CB Radio. I was quite young back when we were fooling around with my dad's old CB radio system. If I recall correctly, I was 16 when I pulled it down from the attic in the house and found myself asking about it at the dinner table that night. He explained what it was. I could communicate on shortwave radio around the area. He offered to set it up and show me how it worked. Now, this was the age before the internet, so my friend Tom and I were fairly excited to be using it. The unit sat in my bedroom for a few months, and we had fun trying to talk to the truckers out on the highway, or the various farmers or herders nearby. Many just ignored us or jumped frequency. We jumped through them all and speak to anybody who would answer. On Channel 29, we began talking with somebody who seemed to be around our age. He said his name was Bobby. We hardly got further than cracking jokes and talking about playing pranks and giving fake traffic reports at first. It was all pretty exciting, but eventually, after a month or two, we agreed to meet up with Bobby. We asked for an address, and he told us he lived on a farm just off Harris Road, around 15 or 16 miles out of town. So Tom took his parents' car one overcast Sunday afternoon, and as the rain broke out, we made our way down the highway and pulled off where we heard Harris Road was. Nearing a split country road, we spied the name of the farm on an old wooden sign that Bobby had told us about over the radio. We pulled up to the drive and took the car right up to the farmhouse, expecting to see him waiting for us. Instead, we were faced with a run-down, dilapidated farmhouse, towered over by what appeared to be a barn falling over its struts. Common sense should have told us to leave, but despite initial confusion, we were convinced that Bobby merely hung out there, that he had found the old radio system in the barn where he usually told us he was when he talked to us. We got out of the car and crunched across the old stone pathway to the barn, pushing the huge doors open with a deafening creak. We called out Bobby's name, heard nothing, and debated looking further. Eventually, we decided to head in, Tom leading the way. Upon rounding the first corner, we found the old radio system sitting up on an old workbench, still online, with the number display lit up and the receiver still crackling away with static. But it was the rotten human bones laying across the workbench that made us run. A chance encounter. During my summer vacation, I had decided that I would get in touch with nature and also try to get into better physical shape. So, on a particularly sunny Tuesday morning, I hopped into my car and drove down to the countryside for a walk, where I could do those two things at the same time. Just as I had hoped, the weather remained pleasant once I reached my destination. Clear blue skies without a single cloud in view, vast hills of green, green grass, as far as the eye can see with only a few clusters of tall trees scattered about the hilltops. And when I looked out far enough to the horizon, I could see sparkling blue seas stretching on for what seemed to be infinity. I loved the city, but hell, this place looked amazing. Still, I got the feeling of the novelty would wear off quickly if I stayed around for too long. I set off walking, heading up the nearest and the steepest hill before me. The fresh air was bracing and clean compared to what I'm used to in the city. The sweet rounds of nature filled my ears, from the distant chirping of birds to the whistling winds that faded in and out of earshot regularly. The place was so serene, but despite the beauty of it all, I felt uneasy. I'm not sure how to explain it to you, but it just feels strange to be the only human being around, you know? There's a sense of isolation and the feeling in the back of your mind that nobody would be around to help you if something happened. Despite this, I pressed on, walking up the hill until I was walking through one long cluster of trees. There was a growing stench in the air that I noticed more and more as I progressed up the side of the long hill. the smell of decaying leaves, but there was a faint hint of smoke in the air. Smelling that made me a little nervous, but I brushed the thought aside. Hell, some plants probably smell like that naturally. I'd hardly know either way. As I walked through the trees, the wind blew up again, and I heard the faint noise of singing. It grew louder and louder over the span of a few seconds, and it suddenly died down entirely. And then I heard a voice, a sweet, soft voice that had sent chills down my spine for some reason. "Hello there. What brings you out to my neck of the woods?" I turned quickly, half expecting to see some leather-face-like monstrosity, and to my surprise it was a woman standing before me, a rather attractive one at that. She was a little on the short side and somewhat skinny, and her skin was strangely pale. Her hair was black and curly, a little frazzled in some parts. "Oh, I'm just going for a walk. I didn't mean to intrude on you, miss." "Don't worry about it. It's nature. You can go where you please in these parts. Nobody owns this part of the hill." Part of me still felt uneasy. This woman, whoever she was, seemed to just teleport in, not a single sound indicating her approach. Maybe the wind drowned out the noise, but, well, there were no signs of footprints anywhere near her. "So I take it you like it here?" It's a really stupid question to ask, but I was nervous at the time and just blurted it out. Thankfully, this mysterious woman was a kind individual and didn't mock me over the stupid question. "Sure I do. I was born and raised in this part of the country. Feels like I've been here forever." That sickly scent grew a little more intense in my nostrils, and I tried my best to suppress my disgust at the smell. "I'm not alone, though. I have a husband and a daughter. We're always eager to meet new people," she added. The more I looked at this woman, the more ill she began to look. Her eyes became more and more sunken in whenever I looked at them, and I began to notice a few cuts and bruises and burns along her arms. Had they always been there? Had I just not noticed them before now? "Well, that is good to hear. Family is important and all," I replied, feeling more awkward and uncomfortable around this nameless woman. "Ain't that the truth? Hey, why don't you come by our house for lunch? It's just over the hill there." She pointed upward, and I followed to the hilltop where her finger was pointing. A sudden wind kicked up, making me flinch, and once I turned around, I noticed that the woman I was just chatting to had completely vanished. At the time, I thought this was just some sort of creepy prank being played on me. You know, country folk waiting to get a good laugh at the city kid. I laughed nervously to take the edge off, but I was utterly alone at the time. Seeing that this woman wasn't going to reappear any time soon, I continued trekking up the hill to continue what I came here to do. The walk up the steep hill gradually took my mind off the strange events from earlier. The ambience of nature took a hold of me again, the soft sounds of birdsong and grass crunching underfoot, filling my ears. That smell persisted and just continued to grow stronger. I came over the hill and was greeted by a sight that made my heart stop. Beads of cold sweat breaking out along my body from the sudden fear. A burnt-out husk of a house on one relatively flat patch of land beneath the other slope of the hill. The flames, whenever they had come about, hadn't actually reached any trees, thankfully. I don't know why, but I started moving down the hill, getting closer and closer to the smoked-out ruin to investigate. I can't quite tell you how long ago this fire happened, but the freshness of the smell makes me think that it couldn't have been more than a day or two. The flames hadn't spread out too far from the structure, and whoever owned the place seemed to clear out all the grass that surrounded their home. Lucky, too. Could have set this whole place ablaze. When I reached the clearing and got a better look at the burnt-out home, I had to hold my shirt up to my nose, anything to block out the stench. I surveyed the ruin, pressed closer to it, until I felt something loudly crunch underfoot. I pulled my foot back, and then a bone. A scorched human bone cracked under where I just walked on. My eyes trailed up against my better judgment, coming to rest on the collection of burnt human bones trapped beneath a layer of dirt and ash. One empty socket stared right at me, shook me to my core, and sent me staggering backward. I looked away, tried to clean the horrible sight from my mind, but as I looked away, I saw another skeleton. This one was lighter and slightly shorter, and going by the anatomy, I think it was a woman's skeleton. And there, cradled in that female's lifeless, bony arms, were the small, scorched remains of a child's skeleton. The cotton field. I came up in the capital of Virginia. However, my family is from rural North Carolina. During the late summers and early autumns, often I would spend time at my grandparents' house. My grandparents were farmers and lived between huge fields of crops. The late fall was always cotton harvesting season, and my grandparents' neighbors planted at least 2 acres of the stuff each year. Often I would go out and walk the field, admiring the beauty of the cotton and surrounding trees. My grandmother did not like this and would tell me not to linger in the cotton field. In fact, she all but forbade me to walk in it. I thought it was because the owner didn't want people walking in her fields, but the owner had seen me walk in the fields picking souvenir pieces of cotton plants. Most times he waved, and if he was close enough, told me to tell my parents hello. My grandmother never told me why I shouldn't go into the fields, other than to say some land is bloodied by anger. I recall once when I was around 12 years old, I was in the woods near my grandparents' home. The hour was late and the cool air of twilight was approaching. Even though I had been throughout these woods many times in the past, I suddenly felt lost and befuddled. I heard the unmistakable caw of what had to be a dozen crows. At first they were distant, but I kept getting closer and closer with every passing moment. Looking up into the trees, it seemed I was surrounded by them, their black eyes all staring down at me. I walked briskly through the woods, hoping to find my way. I kept looking into the trees, and the crows were still there, never moving but constantly cawing, when, suddenly, all went quiet. I started to hear a creaking sound, not unlike the sound a very old rocking chair would make. As I walked, it got louder and louder. I yelled out to ask if anyone was there, but my voice seemed muffled. I stopped in what appeared to be a small clearing, the creaking sound getting louder and louder, and suddenly the air became very cold and bitter. The creaking sound was loud and coming from above me. Looking up, I could see what seemed to be dark shapes in the trees. I walked to try and get home, but the trees seemed to have closed in on me. In the trees were the same odd shapes, but they were much closer, as though the trees wanted me to see. The figures were people, with hands and feet bound, hanging from the neck as though they had been lynched. The creaking was the sound of the swinging bodies hanging from the ropes. Their clothes were old, very old. Their skin looked deathly pale, rotten and infested with insects, but their eyes, their horrible eyes, were open and all fixed on me. Faces fixed, in contortions of anger and hatred unlike anything I've ever seen. I ran and ran as far and as fast as I could when I came to the cotton field. Thinking I was near my grandparents' house, I felt relieved. But the field was huge, much larger than it should have been. Acres and acres of cotton laid before me. I walked through the field, again looking to find my way home, when the cawing started again, louder this time, more angry. Again I ran, hoping to find a safe place, and the field of cotton started to become withered. The plants looked more like withered, twisted hands reaching out from the ground than plants. I ran, and I'm certain I could feel the plants grabbing at my legs and feet. A wailing started, and I could hear the word Shaitani whispered in the voices. It sounded like hundreds of voices wailing in pain and anger, saying this unfamiliar word, Shaitani, over and over. I tripped and fell, only to find my legs held by the stems of these withered cotton plants. The grip was so tight, it felt as if they were going to tear my ankles off. At this point, I gave up. The cawing and wailing got louder, and all I could do was yell and cry for help. I heard footsteps getting closer to me, and I closed my eyes, not wanting to see what horrible thing was approaching. I tapped on my shoulder and I yelled and tried to fight whatever it was that had touched me. Suddenly, all the noise stopped. The tapping on my shoulder was my uncle, who had heard me yelling and came out to find out what was going on. Gone was the wailing, the shapes in the trees and the crows. Everything was normal. The cotton field was normal. Grandmother's house was a few yards away. Except I had a sprain in my ankle, the same ankle that the cotton plants had grabbed. They laughed at my story and asked if I had found Old Man Cuffy's hidden moonshine stash. They all laughed except my grandmother. All she said was that some land ain't seen the light of a god. Later, I researched the area and found out that the land where the cotton field was once owned by a callous plantation owner. He was a cotton grower and had a foreman who punished the slaves harshly. This foreman was a vicious and superstitious man and punished them for minor offenses. He once hung over 60 slaves after mutilating them for some offense. He had the bodies buried where the cotton field is today. His name was Atully, but the slaves called him Shetani, which is Swahili for devil, due to his habit of keeping the corpses of slaves in a pile until they rotted. While the slaves slept, he would stuff some of their mouths with cotton. These slaves always became his next victims, including the children, as he believed if any of his children became adults, they would trap his soul in an Araminho. However, he failed to kill them all. Some survived. The plantation owner finally took notice of all the killings and organized a search for Tully. He was never found. Oh, in the morning after my experience in the cotton field, I awoke with a small piece of cotton in my mouth. My grandmother says I am Tully's great-great-great-great-grandson.
Hey, it's Spooky Boo. I'm headed off right now to go watch Creature Features on creaturefeatures.tv since I missed it on Saturday night playing on Coffee TV 20. So why don't you watch it with me? Just dial in to creaturefeatures.tv on the web and check it out. I love those old campy horror movies, like the old Dracula and all of those old movies. I absolutely love them. And Vincent Van Dell totally rocks my world.